then we will weaken ourselves for what is really the issue. And then behind that all lies a very personal and human feeling that I don't think old men ought to promote wars for young men to fight.
America's lost somewhere inside of Littleton. 11 million children born in Ritalin. That's why I don't run for the sake of Ritalin. False media, we don't need it, do we? Pilgrim, slave, Indian, Mexican. It looks real fucked up for your Mexican. That's why I don't run for the sake of Ritalin. False media.
If I can't work to make it, I'll rob and take it. Either that or me and my children are starving and naked. Rather be a
criminal. Alright guys, welcome to episode number 5, I think this is now. Man, we're really moving forward, aren't we?
I mean, I don't know if it counts if nobody's listening yet, but sure, we are talking to each other a lot.
I looked at the statistics, and we've, you know, because Blog Talk Radio thing we use keeps track of listeners across platforms. So, and we've only just gotten on to, we've gotten a few dozen, actually.
Whoa.
It was about 40 last I checked. So, yeah, welcome to episode 5. This is Eric Mack. Over there is Brett Madsen.
I'm Brett Madsen, that guy. The song you just heard was False Media by The Roots, Philly Represent. Please don't sue us for using it.
Yeah, chosen by Brett.
Woo!
Yes. So
weird. That was one, a lame-ass woo, and two, it was for me. I don't think you're allowed to do that for yourself. Like, yes, I liked a song one time and asked you to play it. Anyway, yeah. What's on today's episode?
Let's see. So the last episode we did was, we want to do this long thing on the media, and so I divided it into 3 parts that I thought would each take about an hour. And it turns out the first part we did on social media took about an hour, and we only got through half of it. So
you plan it out just thinking of the ideas, and you forget the parts where I'm going to come in and talk about something stupid for 10 minutes of our time. You forget that part.
I suppose. Well,
all right. So
tangents are healthy. I mean, it's not like this is forced conversation. So,
tangents are healthy.
Yes. So
the therapist tells me
where we left off. I'd gone through the sort of thesis. It's not really a thesis. It's just something talked about early on in a book that I've been reading called Sapiens, about how transmitting fiction is really the ability that separates humans or Homo sapiens from first other humans when we basically just came along and wiped all the other human species out, which kind of gets overlooked in biology class and history class, I suppose.
What are those?
I can't. So like the Neanderthals were just another type of Homo Neanderthals.
No, we're going to be spending too much time on this now. When I said what are those, I meant, remember how I was homeschooled for a lot of years? I don't remember what history or science class are. So.
Oh, right. Yes.
Biology is a foreign concept still. I learned words.
Yes. Well, it's I like the 30,000 foot level. So that's why I like reading books like Sapiens, you know. I said in the last episode, recommended to me personally by President Obama. So
he's a friend of the show.
Friend of the show. He's a little busy at the moment running the country, but after he's done, we're going to have him on as a guest.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll book him. We'll talk with his people. He'll talk with our people, who are us. I'll be your people if you be my people.
So it was really the ability to
lie.
basically come up with these kind of causes that are abstract and sometimes not entirely truthful that basically led to the Homo sapiens rise and able to basically coordinate attacks and, you know, basically fight in greater numbers, much greater numbers. If they're all sort of fighting for the same cause, it was too hard for the Neanderthals, for instance, to coordinate in high numbers because they couldn't do that.
Kind this of an is interesting... the saddest and yes. grimmest analogy for the 2006 presidential campaign I've ever heard.
Yes.
I don't like that the Democrats are by necessity Neanderthals.
Yes.
They could communicate effectively. Like, hey, you over there in LA, you still Neanderthaling? They're like, oh yeah, how's it going in New York? Are there things in between? Whatever.
Yeah, so obviously we are talking about social media generally here in both last episode and this episode. And Trump was able to use Twitter to great effect. We're going to get into that in more detail about how he was able to create a feedback loop basically holding CNN and all the cable networks hostage, which was comical and then terrifying as he won. But
still terrifying. Terrifying. Let me walk you through some countries that have state control of their media. Russia, China. China also has state control of the internet. It's fun times.
I saw on Ian Bremmer's Twitter that I follow people I like on Twitter. Foreign affairs columnist for Time Magazine.
Friend of the show.
Yes. Yeah. I saw on his Twitter that Russia has announced a French language like state news.
Oh, because Marine Le Pen.
Yeah, and he's like in other news, there's an election coming up in France.
Fuck me. Jesus. Okay.
Yeah. So they're moving on to France's election after ours.
Yep. I mean, they'd already given that party, I forget, it's the National Right Front or something. It sounds as far right as it is, but they'd already actually donated millions to them. So.
Okay.
Whee!
All right. So obviously with this election, there was no escaping, even if you weren't on Twitter or Facebook, looking at you, Brett.
Yeah.
There was no escaping this sense of people just flinging around news stories, some of which may or may not have been factual, may or may not have been biased. But we all got in our corners on this one, and it was ugly for the side that lost. I know that was particularly hard to take. A lot of it was for this reason, you know, just because it felt like the people we lost to were kind of living in a different reality, and I'm sure they say the same about us. So,
So this is maybe a tangent, and
yes,
something a little
that I come
bit back
of a tangent,
to all the time. No. I'm saying I guess I'm making a tangent from the tangent.
Yes.
When you say that it's disappointing, the election loss is disappointing for the side that lost because of the sense that others live in a different reality. That's actually something that's concerning to me. Not that others live in a different reality. That's concerning, I hope, to everybody.
Well,
I mean, it's concerning
to
both sides. They just
now the new administration
and
government is going to try to make their alternate reality actual reality, which is kind of scary. They're going to try.
I don't know. Well, we can talk about that more later. I think the top of the administration is going to try and present that reality. Elements of the administration are going to try to turn a country, I think with the president's blessing, into Russia, essentially. We're going for Russia or China, maybe. And China moves a little too slow. We're going for Russia. And then the Republican leadership, who are actually going to set a lot of policy, are going to try and turn it into their like wet dream of the 1980s. Which is not how the 1980s actually went. If you'll recall from your high school wet dreams, when you woke up, you had not actually slept with the hottest girl at school. So such is the 1980s for Paul Ryan, I think. But
yeah.
Anyway, so that's not what concerns me. What concerns me is the sense you get from liberal commentators, who I normally really like, that this other alternate reality is the main problem, the main thing we have to fear from a Trump presidency. I think there are practical consequences, like validating crazy people and validating the crazy parts of sane people, because we all got a little crazy in us and we need to acknowledge that. That's bad, but the real danger is in the stuff Trump is actually going to do in the real world, which I think the danger from him as president comes primarily from his foreign policy lack of knowledge. I'm not sure there's a great word for it, but I think that's the more dangerous part and the thing that the executive branch can change more easily without congressional oversight or with limited congressional oversight. Anyway, that was a tangent to the tangent. We were going to talk about how the internet markets itself, weren't we?
Well, we were first going to talk about a little bit of history of the news media. So
do it.
So a great movie is Good Night and Good Luck from about Edward R. Murrow. In the 1950s, during McCarthyism, when CBS News kind of took a stand. I would say those days are kind of long gone. Back in those days, there was one news broadcast, not a national news broadcast. I don't know if they were doing local news back in the 50s or not. Probably not.
We should have researched more.
Yeah, but it was for 15 minutes, and it might have been commercial free. I'm not sure. I have to go back and watch the movie. Maybe I can't remember if they were going to commercials or not. But yeah, it was only 15 minutes. And, eventually somewhere along the line, it got extended to 30 minutes. And in the late 70s, it was still, I was watching an interview with Dan Rather. Dan Rather was on Bill Maher a few years ago. And he was talking about One of the things that he talked about, which sort of struck me, is, you know, in 1980 or so, maybe a few years before that, there were 50 national news outlets. And now, now that's basically been whittled down to six in terms of corporate media. Of course, now there's all these. The weird thing about this election, though, is like now that there are all these websites that, you know, aren't owned by anybody, that, you know, there's more of these websites which may or may not be doing actual news.
That's not true. Half of them are owned by Putin.
Yeah. Well, another thing is that there's apparently a bunch of like teenagers in Macedonia basically setting up these fake news sites that go viral and get more traffic than the New York Times.
That just had to be the best summer ever for them.
Yeah, but to go back to the
Macedonia's history, Alexander the Great. All right, hit the snooze button. Hit it again. All right, in 2016, shit's gonna get real.
Yeah, we'll get more into fake news in a second, but I want to finish this point about how there were around 50 national news outlets in like the late 70s, early 80s. And then I was watching the CNN documentary miniseries on the 80s, and it was sort of in that decade that the news department got commercialized, and that like suddenly, you know, like the news department had like sort of never at these networks had sort of never been like asked to make money before, you know, who are doing these like nightly news broadcasts. They were never kind of asked to make money.
It was, here are a list of facts. Here is a white man with a deep voice to read them to you.
Yeah, and so the reason why, so like Tom Brokaw, Dan Rather, and Peter Jennings basically came along on the three main networks and got paid a shitload of money is because suddenly there was, you know, suddenly news was making money. That's why they got paid so much. Whereas before it was just kind of a loss leader where, you know, it was more just kind of a public service. And
how quaint.
Yes, but there's just so much corporate consolidation over the next two or three decades that now there isn't a lot of variety in terms of who owns the news sources. And there's been such a fracturing in terms of, you know, they still do the nightly news programs. I'm not sure who watches them, but there's seemingly a lot more money in these kind of niche markets, whether it's The Daily Show or whether it's Telemundo or, you know,
anything on Fox.
Yeah, I mean, Fox would obviously be the prime example of they discovered, oh, there's a market for this. And, you know, there's just a huge right-wing media apparatus, obviously, and that's been set up, I guess, probably since the early 90s.
More fragmented, though.
Yeah.
More fragmented than it's been in some time.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, because Glenn Beck was not a fan of Trump.
Glenn Beck says that he is partly to blame and people like him are partly to blame for the rise of Trump, and he regrets it and he's trying to do the right thing now. I mean,
correct.
Glenn Beck is still wild if you hear him interviewed. His opinions are still frightening, but that's still a shocking admission from somebody I just thought was like that. I didn't realize he was even in on the joke, which is maybe a lesson for me and other, you know, ivory tower liberals, is that there's a lot of savvy in those operations, right? Like, yeah. I often dismiss out of hand. I bristle anytime somebody tells me Trump is smart. And, you know, I think it's pretty apparent that he's not really. But his team's pretty clever. Granted, you know, they thought they were going to win. They definitely made some rookie mistakes in presentation. But pretty clever in some ways. And I think it's dangerous for us to just write that off entirely.
Well, I think Trump is a lot more intuitive than people give him credit for. I don't think,
including me.
I don't think, you know, if you asked him, you know, what was your strategy here? You know, were you actively trying to create this feedback loop of basically having CNN on and then basically being like, oh, the CNN's gotten boring. How about I just inject something new into the news cycle? And then tweeting, and then CNN goes into breaking news, and then like, oh, Trump tweets something outrageous, and then Trump, you know, watches for about 15 minutes, and then tweets again. Oh, the CNN coverage is very unfair. I'm being treated very unfairly. And then it's like, it's just this loop of, it's just retarded, and it's just, I cannot stand it. So, and that's sort of...
By the way, in the last, like, few seconds we've managed to anger everybody. Yes. I've suggested that liberals, including myself, kind of had our heads up our asses. Then you use the word retarded in the correct way. I will stand by that use of the word forever. So we're done. Now we've angered the conservatives, we've angered the liberals. If we were up to 40 people, I think we're down to 3 now. So yes. Anyway, if you want to continue for those 3 people.
Right. So I think Trump is actually, I mean, I think he's great at working the crowds. I think he's great at selling, you know, particularly if you see him like early on in the campaign with interviews. He's very good at just sort of deflecting objections. I know that from doing selling myself, that he's very good at just sort of plowing through whatever somebody says and just basically flicking their objection aside. Because he's, you know, it's this thing where that's why he never admits that he's wrong. It's because that's how he, because the only way to get the sale is just to keep going, right? It's just like, don't let anything slow you down. Just keep going until you get them to say what you want them to say.
Well, I think it's the perfect marriage of his, I still struggle to call this a skill, but I need to learn. It's a shit skill, and it's a skill for low people, but it is a skill. So he's got that skill, but it's also a perfect marriage of that skill and his personality, because he is just a stark raving narcissist.
Yeah.
Like he, that's the part he doesn't control, which is kind of like, this whole thing should be really funny, because everything he says is fucking amazing. It's just, whenever there's even a hint that any of it might become a policy proposal, you just shit yourself.
Yeah. I mean,
but it's really funny shit. And maybe that's, hell, let's throw everything into the pot. Maybe that's an underrated reason why he won, is he's funny. He's mean. He's terrible. He doesn't construct jokes. Like, he's not saying funny things. He is funny. His existence is funny.
Right, and he doesn't take anybody making jokes at his expense with any sort of humor. I mean, there's no.
Again, he's a narcissist. He doesn't know that he's funny. He knows that he's effective, but the vision of himself. Oh, I mean, it just comes to the fact that he thinks he looks really good, which is hysterical. It's like he's never seen another person before. That's amazing. It's kind of wonderful. If he didn't have power, that's the danger here.
So I will give Trump a lot of credit that I think he's very intuitive about these things, just because he's 70 years old and he's understood how to. I just think he has a lot of experience with working the press, doing interviews, and all this kind of stuff. So I think he's developed a certain proficiency for doing that. I don't think he's able to, you know, if you asked him what he was doing exactly, like what the strategy was, he wouldn't be able to tell you that, because I think to him, it's all just kind of instinct at this point. But I do think he's
like a talented high school running back who never bothers to learn the plays, cause he knows they can run through everybody.
Yeah. It's like, just go, like, once you see the hole, run through it. Yeah.
Right. Right. And doesn't worry about the blocking schemes, doesn't worry about what the quarterback's supposed to do, probably takes the ball from the quarterback when it's supposed to be a fake half the time. And so the hope, I guess, from everybody was that once this talented idiot made it to the next level, to college, that, you know, he would get the shit kicked out of him. But it just didn't happen. Apparently there's no college in American politics. There's middle school, I guess, is where we're at. That's as far as you can go.
Yeah, well, I was watching this. I didn't watch the actual show. I just saw a link on Facebook that somebody posted, as a Bernie supporter, I know, posted to Bernie doing a town hall last night on MSNBC.
What is it with these 1,000-year-old candidates who just want to keep campaigning?
Yeah, well, it was a town hall with, I think it was entirely Trump voters in Wisconsin or something, is I think how they structured it. So it was like a room full of Trump voters and Bernie Sanders and that guy Chris Hayes, and who was facilitating the conversation, and so they were all saying, like, no, we don't believe in racism or whatever, like, and no, we don't want Muslims deported, or, you know, we don't want, you know, we don't believe in that at all, and would never want to have that become law. And Bernie Sanders was like, But you realize that, like, Trump was saying this over and over again, that he wanted to, you know, like, build a wall, for instance, and do all this other kind of stuff, deport 11 million people and not allow Muslims in. And they're all of them said, yeah, but he didn't really mean that. I mean, he was just kind of saying that. I mean, and plus, Congress wouldn't let that happen anyway. I mean, there's Congress. And Bernie was like, well, you realize that, like, I'm actually in Congress and that the Republicans have the majority in both houses, and and I actually know these people, and that they actually do want to do some of these things.
Don't make me love Bernie after I came on and say,
yeah,
fuck Bernie. Don't make me love.
Well, I can find something else.
Okay, good.
Well, it's not really relevant to the conversation. It's wealth and income inequality, but.
If I've learned anything from this election, it's that stubbornly holding to your views, regardless of the facts or the outcome of any contest, is the only way to victory.
Well, I mean, actually, to finish this thought, this is how they ended the conversation or whatever. The lady he was talking to was like, you know, yeah, we should keep Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, education, all that stuff. And she's like, yeah, I mean, we all need that. Again, the sort of people who vote Republican who want that stuff, but kind of don't conceive of a way of really paying for it. Or they're sort of on board with the ideology of, we need to not spend money on that stuff, but we still need it. And can we please have it? And yeah. And Bernie was like, yeah, I mean, they're basically, you know, what the Republicans are doing is they have this guise of, oh, we're saving Medicare and Social Security by cutting it, right? It's like we're cutting it to a manageable level, therefore we're saving it. So they're branding their policy package as, oh, we're saving it. And so that's what these people have heard, I guess. And what Bernie told them was, no, actually they're making cuts to the benefits that you guys would get. And they this is something they want to do as soon as Trump takes office. And then Bernie did this thing where, and so, the, yeah, you know, the woman was like, oh, well, I don't like the sound of that. And Bernie then did this thing of like, he's like, well, over the past, you know, 25 years, money has been taken from you and then been given to the top 0.1%. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, wait, somebody actually has taken these people's money? I mean, it's like, he's conflating the abstract notion of, like, yes, the money has been squeezed out of the middle class and then shifted over in this, like, kind of abstract sense
to, like, someone broke into your house.
Yeah, but he
lifted
was
up your mattress.
He was presenting it like, yeah, somebody has been, so, like, the billionaires have come into your house and broken your piggy bank and single-handedly lowered your wages
and let me
stifled
be clear.
Your wage growth.
I don't want anyone listening to this to think that I keep all my money in cash under my mattress. You can't prove it.
And I was kind of like, well, that is not the same thing. That to me was just kind of like, that was kind of crossing the line. Like, you can't just actually say to somebody,
right,
like, oh, these people have actually, like, punched you in the face and taken your money.
Yeah.
It's like,
there's a difference between there being an inefficient lunch to lunch distribution system,
yeah,
and everybody in the school, like all the principals coming out and punching you and taking your lunch money. There's a difference between those two things.
But he actually converted her. He's like, and you know, and he's like, oh, so I take it that you are for Medicare and Social Security. I'm trying to do the Brooklyn accent like Bernie.
You just got to do it. Once you get into one of a bad impression, you got to stick it out.
Yeah. But,
okay, you're out now. Okay, you pulled up. You didn't hit the runway.
Yeah, and it's like, I take it you want all these things, and she's like, yes. And it's like, okay. And do you think you should pay for it, or do you think the billionaire should pay for it, or whatever? It's like, oh, I think they should because they took the money from us, or whatever. I'm like, oh god, like, I just
this
just,
is
it's
it
just,
can't be like this. It can't be. It can't be the Republicans and the person who took over the Republican Party, who is very much not a Republican, it can't be like they join forces to tell you attractive lies. And then the Democratic response is, we're going to tell you our own more attractive lies. It can't be like that.
Yeah, I was kind of like, man, like
so Bernie, close, so far.
Bernie, damn it!
Fuck Bernie Sanders.
Yeah,
I gotta stop saying that.
It really drives me crazy. But that is not the same thing. In the more abstract sense, people getting paid through either wages or assets and investments, more of that money that's getting paid out is getting paid out to rich people and that's concerning. Yes, that is not the same thing as, well, the rich people have just come and just beat you up and taken your money. That's just...
Yeah, unless you're a Wells Fargo customer, that didn't really happen, even metaphorically.
Yeah. Okay. Well, enough about Bernie. We said we weren't going to go there, and then we went there for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So,
all right, we haven't really been on the media much in this one. History of the media. There used to be a bunch of organizations. Then it got whittled down to a few.
So
money came into the equation.
Corporate consolidation.
Equation
also
is a word I used to pronounce.
Well, the thing is, like, things consolidated and then they expanded again. I guess once the internet came into play. I mean, I guess first through cable and then through internet, through various themed websites. You know, so obviously, good example of this that people may be familiar with. ESPN had a site that we both loved called Grantland. That was an example of a themed website that was a subsidiary.
Rest in peace.
And they still have 538 themed website. And I guess they're still doing the Undefeated, which I haven't looked at all. But
so could we possibly be any whiter that we just said we miss Grantland dearly? I read 538 obsessively, but the black website, the Undefeated, we're not even sure if it's still there. We haven't checked.
Well, to be fair, the rollout of it took like 2 years and was kind of a joke. But
we're racist, and I need to accept that. All right, continue.
We saw the concentration of power as far as who pulled the levers in the media. In terms of like who was sort of channeling the information, I mean, it ultimately started with a very few number of puppet masters, right? Where there's ultimately in the entertainment industry, there's basically in sort of telecommunications industries, I guess what I would say, there are six huge mega conglomerates. There's the Walt Disney Company, Viacom, Time Warner, Sony. I'm trying to think of the other one.
Sony's getting out punched these days, aren't they?
Yeah, let's see. Trying to think of all the lots that they have around
we
here.
We should have made a list.
Well, I usually know them offhand, but
Columbia TriStar.
Well, that's part of Sony.
I know.
Yeah, they're Fox, News Corporation, which I guess is called 21st Century Fox now. But and then there's one more. Lionsgate is independent. Summit is independent. Oh, NBC Universal. That's the other one.
Oh, wow. They're still... Yeah. I guess the movie division floated them the last few years.
That's the six. And it's sort of been that way since the late 90s. I guess the music industry used to kind of have six. Now it's down to three. Warner, Sony, and Universal. They're not
Is Warner
so well.
Is EMI Warner now?
EMI is now Universal.
Oh, okay. Shit, shows you what I know.
They,
okay.
They got folded into
anyway,
Universal.
Few conglomerates for everything. The music you listen to.
Yeah, that's just not a good thing any way you slice it, right? To have these few, the revenue being channeled through essentially these six different organizations.
It's not good for the economy, essentially, because it stifles composition. It's not good for any of us because we can't necessarily get different opinions or see different models of information distribution. Yeah, it's not really good.
Yeah. So you had this rapid consolidation toward the end of the 90s. And then once the internet came into this, then you had these an explosion in like blogs and themed websites that were all it tamed
podcasts.
Yes. It became a niche market over the course of the last decade or so.
And became the barbecue sauce aisle at local convenience store.
Everything now is niche. I mean, it's literally gotten to the point where I think The Walking Dead's ratings are down to about 10 million viewers a week. And that's like the highest rated show
down
on TV.
Down to 10 million views.
But there was a time when ER used to get like 30 to 40 million viewers a week 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Did their third episode get like 44 million viewers or something? It was something nuts.
Yeah. I mean, this was, I mean, it's just a huge change in how we do not consume things together anymore. You know, I mean, one of the things I used to love about growing up in the 90s was, you know, like I'd watch something on TV, you know, it'd be like a really good Simpsons episode. And then on Sunday night, and then, you know, I'd go into school Sunday morning or Monday morning. And
I went to school Sunday morning. You're mixing us up.
Yes. And I'd be like, my other friends who would be Simpsons fans, I'd be like, wow, what'd you think of the episode last night? You know, well, and we'd be reliving the episode or whatever. And, you know, it, like, that's kind of what we used to do. Whereas I feel like now with like the DVR and this like time shifting, it's almost like it's kind of like, you know, all that relativistic time dilation in Interstellar, you know, where we're all like just kind of on like this different time shift. It's weird. Like we're all still physically on Earth, but like I feel like all of our brains and all of our minds are like somewhere else or something. It's like a combination of Interstellar and Inception.
I think I'm beginning to understand Interstellar now. It was actually an art installation. It was talking about time and space and the differences in feelings of time. And the whole point was that you were only in the theater for about 2.5 hours, 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yes, and it was pretty long. Yeah.
Yeah, and yet you felt and your brain was convinced you had been in the theater for about 4 weeks without food or water.
Yeah.
So that was the Interstellar piece.
Yeah. But it has become, I mean, it's just, it's weird when, you know, in like social gatherings, when, you know, you're talking to somebody who's essentially from another universe in terms of like what they, you know, because there's no common set of, it's like, well, what kind of shows do you like?
Yeah.
Well, I watched this show on Amazon. Or I watched this other one on Hulu. I'm like, I don't even get Amazon and Hulu. Like, we're all just sort of
slice of America that still watches CBS.
Yes.
It's a big slice, too. We write it off like, oh, yeah, the olds are. No, there's like. Well, one, old people fucking vote. Two, this. There are pockets of the country that are different, and they're not where you think they are. Again, I'm in very blue territory. Like, Philly went, like, 82% for Clinton. And the counties around, even though they're much wealthier, are usually they tilt blue. That's the political layout up there. But you get outside of Philadelphia, and, like, I've heard more talk of unions in the since I've moved here than I've heard in my entire life. Like, unions just weren't a thing. They were things that I saw about on documentaries until I moved here, and now I'm meeting union members, and they're
season 2 of The Wire.
Yeah, that's my relationship to it. I saw a premium cable show, and that's how I know about them. And now I'm doing things like I pass a bar here. It's even like the hipster zone of the city, where you'll still up in Fishtown, you'll still see at least one bar that says union members and local tradesmen proudly welcomed here. Are they rejected other places? Like, do they? Do they keep them out? We don't serve your kind. How do you know? But yeah, you and in this world, like things that I just didn't think about happen. People love Allstate commercials. If you get out into like Bucks County,
with the,
like, you know, the things that fast forward.
Dennis the Beeper King guy. In them?
No. I think that's Allstate. You're right. State Farm. I went to a Halloween party in Bucks County.
With what's his name? The bald guy?
No, that's Farmers. How do I know
this? Oh, yeah. Wow.
How do I know this? But I didn't know the major conglomerates. I watched too many football games. But yeah, while the rest of us are, aside from the occasional NFL game, not watching commercials anymore. I mean, we're getting advertised to constantly, but it's through Facebook. You know, we're not actively watching commercials. Out in Bucks County, half, you know, a second away from supposedly urban liberal Philly, which, I mean, it is both those things, but it doesn't have the connotations you would think. I went to a Halloween party where a guy was dressed as Jake from State Farm, who was apparently a character in a commercial for State Farm.
Wow.
Yeah, like, that's a world. At the same, I think it was the same group of friends, like at a different party. Someone was like, there was an argument about whether this joke that they were reciting was from Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo, One or two.
Oh, Jesus.
There was a sequel to it.
Yeah, European Gigolo, yeah. I remember. I mean, I saw it at Blockbuster. That's how long ago it was. But, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, like, so you read all these stories. I guess, tying us back to the media thing. You read all these stories, especially in the very patrician New York Times, which I do love, but it's fun to knock them for this, about how the world is changing. They don't have the things they used to, and the economy now lives here. And it's just, for a lot of people, it doesn't happen that fast. Like, there's this whole other world. There's this whole, like, and you might think that, you know, people just like different movies than I do, but it's a whole way of doing comedy that essentially doesn't happen except for holdovers from that era anymore. Like, really long setups, really, like, big, obvious, gratuitous punchlines. That's it. People just don't kind of do that.
CBS sitcoms, right.
Right.
With
right.
a laugh but track.
But people still like that. And the thing that's dangerous is when you live in these different bubbles, when I say people still like that, now some of these people are my friends. And that's good. I think that's really, really healthy. I mean, I'm not going to enjoy all the movies they like, but it's good for me to get that perspective. We're getting to the point where we have these online bubbles that manifest in real life, where people who like a different style of joke than you probably vote a little different than you, and then you just kind of don't talk to them anymore, and you live this entirely separate reality. And it just can't go on like that. It can't go on like that because if the nation functions like that, it'll stop being a country.
Yeah, I just don't remember there being this divide on politics. I just don't remember it being, I mean, I was young in the 90s, but I just don't remember people talking about it that much. You know, I don't, you know, it was just like people were people and who cares what your politics were, you know?
It's like, well, oh, man, this is interesting. Okay. So the biggest mistake, this is going to be broad, one of the biggest mistakes that any person or collection of people has made in the last 50 years, at least in America, is the weaponization of the evangelical Christian vote.
Okay.
Evangelical Christian voters didn't give a shit about politics. They're like, these guys, they live in Washington, they got their suits and their finery, and it's just not Christian. Which, I mean, depending on your interpretation of the Bible, is kind of right. And so they kind of did their own thing. And you started through the 70s and then really strongly in the 80s. You started getting to the point where, well, no, if you're Christian, you have to vote this way. And that way was Republican. And so I grew up in the 90s. And, man, I heard a lot of sermons about basically why it's a sin to vote Democrat.
Really?
Oh, fuck yeah. Like where these are not mainline denominations, okay? This is not like it's an Episcopalian church where there's a guy, he gives a homily that he's given for 1,000 years.
Hey, it's a sermon. We call it a sermon there.
Oh, in the Episcopal church. All right, yes. Catholic then, homily, whatever. The one of the liturgical ones. Like, there's no liturgy. You sing some terrible music, and then a guy talks for an hour. And there are a couple of different versions of this. There's the, like, oh, man, I mean, this is difficult to describe. Where I grew up, I mean, the church I grew up in when I was younger was the physical manifestation of the things that you're now seeing on Facebook. I have a book that I think is still in my childhood bedroom, if my mom hasn't, like, burned that bookcase yet. There's a book on that shelf called When in the Course of Human Events, The Case for Southern Secession.
Whoa.
I swear to Christ. I was given a biography of Stonewall Jackson by the Southern theologian R.L. Dabney, and I dropped it.
I don't know who that is?
Oh, fuck yeah, it's okay that you don't know. Okay. Those were, I mean, Stonewall Jackson's.
I know really important. Yeah, I know who Stonewall Jackson is, just not the theologian.
If you don't know who R.L. Dabney is, one, it means you probably have a life. Two, it means you're not super into, like, his random thoughts on why the African needed to be domesticated by the Jesus. White man. Yeah. No, there's a long segue on that. It's like the first chunk of the book, which is the only part I got through because I was kind of horrified even at that age, was this bit where Dabney is like, so Stonewall, a lot of people are coming around with these crazy new ideas. He's writing after the war. That slavery isn't so cool, and Stonewall wasn't the best person who ever lived because he owned slaves. And to that I say, and you know, there's a lot of words, a lot of Faulknerian length and verbiage without Faulknerian wit and construct. And at the end of it, you get like, they're black. We had a house train them. So the way to do it was to kidnap them and whip them. And that was good for them.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So these were things like, this world existed. I just didn't think it was going to get as kind of mainstream as it's gotten. One of the things that's wildly underreported about this election is that Trump, thrice married, baldly amoral Trump, got 2% more of the evangelical vote than Mitt Romney did.
Oh, well, yeah. I noticed it was trending that way. I was sort of holding out hope that, how does this guy who's quoting 2 Corinthians, I mean, it's so obviously not a holy man.
Oh, I love the one where he said that he's never felt sorry for anything.
Why would evangelicals, I could understand how they wouldn't like Hillary because, like, they don't seem to appreciate well-to-do women, but.
Women in power is bad. Also, pantsuits. I, like, can't stress enough how much they hate pantsuits. I can't explain it. It's just there.
Okay.
I lived in it. They don't like pantsuits.
Okay. Keep that in mind. But I was hoping that, like, yeah, that they were just not going to vote for Trump. I mean, I knew they weren't going to vote for Hillary, but yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, I should be clear. It's possible that there was some depressed turnout. I don't think there was. But when I was saying he got 2% more, I meant the share of those who voted. I think that's what I got off the...
Well, Trump got about 62 million votes, I think. And so yeah, he got slightly more than Romney, so overall.
And Clinton got 65 now?
Like, she's approaching Obama in 2012, so...
Isn't that crazy? After the night after, or the day after the election, when we were... I was hungover for about a week. You were more sober about it, which I think was to the detriment of your health.
Yes.
We were both saying, like, there wasn't enough turnout, and there wasn't. The population has grown since 2012.
Well, also, 45% of the electorate who didn't vote, fuck you. Seriously. Like, just freaking vote.
Yeah, I mean, that's harsh because this is my first election voting, so... Well, but...
You had, in the previous two elections, you had two competent candidates.
That's true, so yeah.
You knew somebody reasonable was going to win.
Even a lot of people who voted against Trump, not all of them, but many people who voted, and I mean that, against Trump, like didn't like Hillary, weren't into it. I think there's a relative minority who thought that Trump is a true existential danger to the United States. But he is. Yes. He just is. Like, the policies he wants to pursue are... the antithesis of everything that the country has been built on. He wants to be a strong man. He wants to be like Putin in Russia. He wants to give other barons, essentially. He wants to be king and have aristocracy. And he also wants to intimidate and take wherever he sees fit overseas. And he doesn't mind shutting the lights out in the rest of the world to do that. I don't mean he's going to launch a nuclear attack. I mean, he doesn't really care about interacting with other countries if it doesn't seem like it's going his way. On a personal level, like a one-to-one, if he doesn't like the person who's in charge of your country, even if there's no true person in charge of the country because it's like a republic or constitutional democracy, if he doesn't like the person he's dealing with, he might just not want to deal.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, so, this is the sort of thing that happens with bubbles.
Yes, and a lot of bubbles, to take it back to the media, I mean, these are sort of media, I don't know if the media sort of shapes these bubbles, but definitely kind of closes people in. I would say that, yeah, the media does play that role of
kind. Ooh, when you're saying the media, we talked about this way at the beginning of part one of this thing. The media, do you mean news organizations, traditional news organizations? What are we talking about?
Yes, but, you know, also, yeah, I mean, there's also the other pop culture apparatus that I guess could apply as well. Because knowing you, growing up in the evangelical bubble, I don't think you were exposed to the pop culture bubble, not bubble, but mainstream, whatever.
Right.
the way that, you know, everyone else in America is.
Right. There, people talk about the death of the monoculture, but I never experienced it. I learn about it later.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, yeah, everybody watched the same shows. I'm like, I wasn't allowed to. They were. I got in trouble for watching Power Rangers as a kid.
Whoa.
I went over to my name. Oh, man. I went over to my friend Danny's house. I still remember this. It still bothers me. And Danny was like, come on, watch it. I won't tell. You know you want to see it. And I did because it was fucking Power Rangers.
Yeah.
And so we watched the shit out of Power Rangers. And I like felt weird whenever the pink one showed up. I'm like, I don't know what these feelings are, but I feel them. And then we went home. And before we even got to my fucking house, Danny yells at my mom, he watched the Power Rangers. I got sold the fuck out.
Wow.
Danny, wherever you are, fuck you, man.
Wow.
That was cold shit.
So the media we consume more broadly than the news does kind of reinforce the boundaries that we've put up to sort of wall ourselves off from each other, intentionally or not. I mean, to some degree, there was always this, you know, there was always a sense of counter programming. You know, like you'd see Tyler Perry movies coming out when we were in college, and we would just kind of we'd kind of laugh and be like, well, that's for I guess they still do that sort of patronizing movies for black people thing.
We're gonna do it like a regular movie, except we're gonna take out all the parts that are good.
Yeah.
But this is where that kind of attitude can get you in trouble, at least as a politician. Like, I'm proud not liking Tyler Perry movies. That's an easy call for me. But people love that shit. And when you just say, oh, only dumb people or only people who aren't educated, that's the worst one.
Yeah.
Using Tyler Perry as a stand-in for, you know, various political shows or ideas, it can get really dangerous really fast. Like, people can be good American citizens and still watch Deuce Bigelow too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't make them bad people. And you and I are as elitist when it comes to art, and I was going to say commerce. I don't know why the two go together, but you do hear that together, right? Art and commerce.
Yeah, yeah. We are elitist fucks. I will grant you that. And maybe we're coming to grips with the danger that when you take that stance outside of the realm, it's useful for.
Yeah. Fareed Zakaria was talking about either this week or last week. I can't remember now, but he was saying that a lot of the Trump voters who sort of come from this era of making things and everything being a product that you can, you know, hold in your hand and that you would actually make, and that would sort of be the pride in their work or whatever, was being a part of making things. And they have this distrust of this information age that has led to people making money from basically manipulating words and numbers around on digital pieces of paper on computer screens.
And yeah, when you say it like that, it sounds as silly as it actually is.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, I mean, like they want to sort of retrain these people, but they sort of resist, and they could, because they're like, that's not what we do. We make things. And it's clearly Trump was able to tap into this better than we thought was possible. And for some reason they view Hillary as, I guess because she's a lawyer or something, that she, they probably find patronizing the whole sort of college educated class who talks down to them, frankly, a lot.
Well, we're in danger of doing that right here. So I'll just say that I mean, I'm not afraid.
I'm trying to own up to that right now, that I don't a great job of that.
Well, and one of the
times I do say things that I shouldn't say about people that are good Americans and are perfectly deserving of our respect.
Yeah, there's one of the problems that we have with this whole thing, which I'm very guilty of personally, is the sense that, oh, they live in the wrong states. They're interested in the wrong things, and they're all the same.
Right.
like there are a lot of people who are mistrustful of the new age we've entered into, and many of them are mistrustful because they grew up in something different. But that's, we're talking about a lot of different experiences here, different types of people.
Let's keep it to the sort of product versus content thing, because I wanted to talk about that. This is sort of an observation I made when I first started working at a digital marketing agency a few years ago, but I had sort of, now this has sort of become a lot more kind of self-evident, but at the time it wasn't. It's just, we've transitioned to everything being a product, like I was saying a few minutes ago. And, you know, labor was, for the most part, even if you were writing a newspaper, right, you wrote something, but it would end up as part of an end product that you would hold in your hand, and somebody would give you money for that thing that you would hold in your hand.
Yep.
And now we've been transitioning to basically everything in the media, even the broader media sense, not just news, but the media, including this podcast, is content. And it is not something you hold in your hand. It is not something you always charge people money for by default, right?
Are we not getting paid for this?
Yeah. It was, you know, no exceptions, right? We lived in this world where if somebody had a CD that they would say like, yeah, this is our new CD. It's out. You know, you can, if you wander through the endless aisles at Tower Records, you can find it in there. And I'd be like, wow, cool. And like, you're willing to give me that for free, a free CD, you know, and because there was limited access to. And so whatever, you know, now we live in this surplus of content where, you know,
you're not interested in the CD in that aisle. You're interested in all the Tower Records. And if it takes you even the time it would take to go to a physical Tower Records, you say, fuck it.
Yeah.
I just want music of some kind from a source that is fast and easy.
And it's much, much, much more efficient a way to deliver the actual content of what used to be included in the product to the end user. But the problem is it's
soul-crushing,
cost-effective to do that. And because so many people can do it at once, that the demand for the inherent what used to be the product, if a CD in this case, basically goes down to nothing. You know, the commercial viability of what used to be entire industries and, you know, jobs that people would have, you know, I always see like, you know, newspapers or magazines laying people off, and it's kind of depressing.
Yep.
Because they do good work, and it's a very unstable time right now. And the thing that I wanted to get into as far as how this sort of works as a business is that it's still structurally kind of the same. It's still, back when you had a newspaper, it was, you made money by ads and subscriptions. It's still pretty much the same way now, right? I mean, you make money from ads,
yeah,
or if you're popular enough, you can charge a subscription fee.
I think this is entirely intuitive, so I'd like to see some actual numbers on this, but I think that's slowly, slowly, slowly starting to come around, subscription fees.
Yeah, and subscriptions are like way more valuable than ads.
Sure.
So I wanted to get back to the fake news thing I was referencing earlier in Macedonia. So I was watching cable news, as I sometimes do, the other day, and this was somebody
who do
was,
every day.
Yeah. This was somebody who was based in the U.S., but he put together he's put together a fake news site that looks exactly like the Huffington Post, and you know he was just being entrepreneurial about it, where he, you know, would just put together these intentionally fake stories that would go viral on social media. And there was this one article about Hillary that I can't remember what it was about specifically, but it was about Hillary that generated $8,000 in advertising revenue.
That's a lot of views
from all the hits. And but you know what he said? He said that he's not going to get any of the payout out of it because Google looked at his site, determined it was a fake news site, and said, you violated the terms of service. So he's not going to get anything. So there's some hope there that, I mean, Google's not obligated to. They don't have to do that. They're just kind of doing that as a service to try to cut down on this shit. But
more of these things need to happen. I mean, you can't assume that everybody is going to be just nice to each other. That's essentially how the world has never worked. Yeah. We started this thing talking about how our branch of humans murdered all the other branches of humans.
Yeah, it was basically it was the first genocide, basically. Literally.
Yeah. Yeah. We're like, hey, we're like this. We don't like the rest of you. Wow. The horror of so many cavemen. I missed biology class. Yeah. So many cavemen getting murdered by dudes who are like, we just don't like you here. Consume me. You can't trust people to just do the right thing because it has essentially never happened. Our species got started by us murdering all the other species that weren't like us. But we do have to rely on it a little, especially in times like this. There's been this talk recently in recent years that troubles me that conflates any capitalist system with carte blanche to just fuck people over relentlessly for whatever your end goal is, which isn't even necessary concrete money. Sometimes it's investment money, whatever it might be. And the idea is that we can't stop it. That's just the market. I mean, the markets involve all of us. So what Google's doing there, yeah, and they're not legally obligated to, but they absolutely ought to be doing that sort of thing. And I mean, it goes for all these platforms, and it goes for us as individuals. Well, you know,
and the other thing is like, okay, if say, you know, Bing then starts a PR campaign saying, look what Google's not doing. Look what they're not willing to do. They're not willing to, you know, stop paying out, you know, revenue to people on these fake news sites. You know, it would just take a competitor basically running a PR campaign or a national commercial campaign. I mean, Microsoft has the money. And then everyone would say, oh, fuck you, Google. And then they'd move with their feet. They'd vote with their feet, as the expression goes, and start using Bing instead of Google, and their market share would go down. So it is in their interest to do that.
Huh. Okay. Well, that's just depressing then.
Yeah. But yeah, it's going to be up to, you know, if Facebook has been looking into, you know, these fake news.
Twitter needs to take Donald Trump off of Twitter.
Yeah.
How fucking effective would that be? Just cut him off of the balls.
He probably wouldn't have won if Twitter had done that. But
what if they do it now? How will he yell at people?
Well, somebody would start a new... That's the thing. Somebody would start a new identical site, and Trump would just join that. And it's just...
Yeah.
The thing is, like, once you already have the following, it doesn't really... The method sort of doesn't really matter. It's just Twitter's the most efficient.
The companies are kind of at your mercy.
Yeah, so to go back to the sort of overall theme of this particular episode, which is the business and the marketing of content and media. Now, once we have entered this world where the supply of content is effectively infinite, all right, it is not actually infinite, although more content is created and then uploaded onto the internet every 48 hours than content was created from the dawn of time to 2003. So there's just a shitload of content being created and uploaded onto the internet. And if you made a list of all the even quality content or content that you would enjoy and, you know, all the stuff that you would want to watch, movies, TV, whatever, you would not have enough time to actually watch all of that. Everything that exists that is possible for you to like, you would not be able to consume all that content. So that's kind of
which is why it's all the more amazing when you're browsing through Netflix and you can't find anything you actually want to watch.
Well, as an aside, Netflix is actually moving toward being just exclusive content. That's why they don't have as much stuff as they used to.
Fuck them.
Yeah. So they're just going to be like a network, but streaming.
Yeah, I mean, everybody will be eventually, I suppose.
Yes. And
HBO is already doing that. Isn't that funny that Netflix started as a thing where they're like, we'll mail you DVDs of Casablanca. And now their goal is like, we just want to be HBO. We want to be the thing that already was, but you press a button on your computer instead.
So the reason why I want to keep focusing on this is because it's super important when you ask the question, you know, when we all ask the question, how do we create news, good news, and like effective, correct news, whatever that means.
Reflexively, when you said good news, I thought you meant the gospel, but yes. Carry on.
Oh, God.
That's what it means, buddy. I'm telling you.
But, you know, how do we basically have this system we used to have, or how do we create a new system where we have an effective news system again? In this age of infinite content, of infinite selection of that content,
how do we
with social media, where everybody's in their own kind of, but everybody basically selects, everybody has a custom news feed now that's tailored to them. You know, which is really cool, but it's as we see here, it has its downsides. You know, you basically create the reality you want to live in, regardless of whether you actually live in it or not.
Yeah. Gutenberg's printing press, the Facebook news feed, same thing.
The question, so but it's like, how do we do this? Is the question I just keep coming back to. I mean,
do you have an idea? Because I really don't. I mean, the essential idea is that you need enough people who actually care about this shit, meaning the facts and careful analysis of them, which will often be boring. Like, even if well written, a lot of, like, the thing we talked about the other week when we were prepping for this one is I said, have you read any of the Panama Papers? Because, you know, I sure haven't. You know, I haven't gone through that trove of enormous trove of documents. So we need people who are willing to do that. And we need people who are willing to read the summaries of that, even if they are extensive and tough. And we need the people who are willing to read the summaries to pay for that collection of data. I just don't know that there are enough people who care to do that.
Yeah, and so the part we haven't really talked about, so I was watching, this was on Reliable Sources, Carl Bernstein was on, and he's on like every other week, it seems like, but he was saying like, we need more good reporting. We need more people going into journalism and going out there and reporting on stuff. And I'm just kind of, this is why I want to talk about the business and the marketing aspect of news, because to me, that's missing the point. That doesn't help anything.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of underemployed talented reporters out there already.
Yeah. Because the problem with that assessment is, and you know, he's old and from the old guard, so I wouldn't expect his suggestion to be anything different. But the problem with that assessment is there's like the market, the slice of the pie that, you know, people, there are a certain percentage of the population is interested in reading good reporting and good news, quality news. But most people aren't. Most people want to get their news from YouTube, Facebook, or word of mouth, Twitter. And there's this distortion process where even if somebody, you know, accurately reports, typically on a local level, you know, the news, and just like, okay, this event happened, these are the facts, blah, blah, blah. Just by the time it gets to you, just because it's more entertaining to read or consume news that is kind of spun in a particular way that you like, or, you know, we don't tend to consume news directly from the source. That's probably the first problem, but the problem is it's not marketable enough to say to people like, oh, go and read these reports, which normally are just kind of boring. Like they can't compete in this sort of this entertainment era, infotainment era, I suppose.
And to be fair to us, the civilians, it also would take a lot of time.
Yeah.
Like, so going back to the Panama Papers example, even if I decided, you know what, it's my responsibility as an educated citizen of the world to go ahead and sift through these documents, I likely wouldn't understand a lot of it because most of them are going to be legal documents and banking statements, and I'm not technically trained in those fields. So I might not even see what's important about them.
Yeah, and so to address the sort of marketing aspect of it, so whenever, obviously, when you create content in this era, there's basically two different sets of rules. One is if you have a brand that exists already attached to the content. And the other is if it's unbranded. And so
my brand is Mad Dog Colognes.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's for dogs.
I mean, obviously, if it's from, if a piece of content is from CNN or New York Times or whatever, it's just, there's going to be a built-in audience, certain assumptions about what the content is going to be, et cetera, et cetera. If you are sort of starting from scratch, which I guess a lot of people are, or we're sort of trying to figure out how do we start from scratch again, like as a society, when it comes to news reporting or news in general, the thing that we sort of have to keep in mind is, and the thing is, like, when it comes to reporters, reporters are faceless. So nobody reads a reporter's article because they love the reporter, right?
Right.
It's like there's no brand, there's no branding involved as far as the tone
of
goes.
The reporter's article. There is some branding, but I mean, the tone of the reporter's article, the branding there, the style is determined by the organization that they report for.
Right. So the thing that makes almost no sense to anybody I explain this to until I get to a certain point is when you're creating content as an unbranded content creator, you have to keep this in mind. The people that you're trying to get the content, consume the content, they don't care about your videos, your articles, your ebook, you know, whatever it is, you know, in terms of
my ebook is a work of passion and art.
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes
I'll fight you.
One of my friends told me he's like writing a five, like he wants to write like a, like he told me like 500 page book on marketing, and I was like, well,
how does he have the page count in mind? That's absurd.
I don't know. I didn't understand that either. But
okay,
I was like, well, okay. So how are you going to get people to read page one? Right, and that's what it comes down to for each piece of content you create. And the thing is, whenever somebody buys something, they don't, this is going to sound like voodoo, but even if somebody goes to a Barnes & Noble, sees a book, and buys the book, they don't actually want the book. They still don't care about the book.
What do they care about?
They care about the value they perceive the book will give them. So even, like, you know, the book is really just a bunch of pages tied together, you know, bound by a hard, I mean, it's just,
let's not get into the book construction here.
Right.
But books are made somehow.
But literally, they, it's not about, whenever you're creating anything, it's not about sort of
the physical construction.
No, it's not about what it is. It's about what, it's about how other people perceive it and what it'll do for them, or sort of what people will get out of it if they look at it, consume it, whatever. And so
this explains Axe body spray.
Yes. So it just seems like, well, if you take Carl Bernstein's lead and say like, oh, well, we need more reporters out there, you know, doing good reporting and this kind of stuff. Well, it's like, I don't see why anybody, I mean, I don't think that's how we consume news anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think people care about that. I mean, you and I may care about that, but.
Well, we might, but even I have to put my money where my mouth is. I read more commentary.
Yes, I do too, because it's just more interesting.
Right. Like, but I want an events wire, right? I want trustworthy sources saying, hey, this is what happened today. But then I'll scan that. I won't even read it too thoroughly. I'll just get the thrust of the events, and then I'll move over to, well, my go-tos are 538 in the Atlantic. Those are the things that I read mostly. They're not news. They're commentary. I mean, 538 sometimes is actually news, but mostly commentary. And that's what I read. I don't know. What's, to wrap this one up, what's your idea? What do you think can be done? Because we need great reporters, but no one is interested in that itself, right? No one's interested in that write-up.
We could see a lot more people sort of want to become journalists, I guess, just because the thing is, I think the answer is, I think all the news organizations, and particularly the TV networks, when we talk about that in the next episode, they're going to realize that they got played, that they sort of, I think what's probably going to happen is this is going to be like a Nixon like presidency. And I think it's going to take good journalism to sort of bring Trump down. And I think there are going to be a lot of people who want to do that.
Also, like a few willing Republicans. Like, Jesus Christ, guys, come on. The country's at stake. You get to install your own guy when he's kicked out. Come on.
Well, I think John McCain is making noises about
Mitch McConnell,
the Secretary of State, because, yeah.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell's making some noise about it. Lindsey Graham is making noise about it, which is really good to see. Yes. Mitch McConnell sort of got strong-armed into it. He clearly doesn't care that much, which, I mean, this is a discussion for another time, but what exactly does Mitch McConnell fucking care about? Because it seems like he sacrifices...
He cares about coal in Kentucky. Yes.
It seems like he sacrifices everything that he might be expected to believe in for the sake of political clout. What does he want to use that political clout on? Like, all he seems to want to do is to sell out to solidify his position so that he can sell out again to solidify his position so that he can sell out. It's very confusing.
Yeah, why isn't he more interested in solidifying his species of amphibian as legit?
His species of amphibian?
Yeah, doesn't he look like an amphibian to you? It looks like...
Okay, so Stewart back in the day.
He looks like he looks kind of like the Admiral Ackbar on Star Wars.
Oh my God, I stepped on your punchline again. This is a good joke. I like this one. I'm confused because Jon Stewart always had him as a turtle. So I just got used to that. But you're right. He does kind of look like more like Admiral Ackbar. Anyway, I don't know. I'm still out of answers.
It's going to be tough. We're going to have to kind of see. It's hard to know right now, but we're going to have to see how
it's literally impossible
how
to know.
Trump.
It's hard to even guess, yes. I guess.
But it's going to be hard to until Trump actually takes office and we see what happens. I don't think the Trump presidency is going to be as bad as I thought it was on election night in terms of
I am pretty frightened.
Well, sure, I'm frightened as well, but I don't think in terms of, well, first of all, on election night, I was still thinking that, like, oh, this was a white lash, as Van Jones put it, and like, oh my God, where did all these racists come from? Because that's how the media was selling it. But I was kind of terrified. Interesting thing, I was thinking earlier today about how there needs to be more transparency. It's weird because we have all this kind of access with in terms of social media, but there's going to be less transparency.
Well, Trump's already ditching his press pools. Yeah. And the press, by the way, those press pools are covering this in the wrong way. They're saying, look how insulted and affronted we are. Instead of saying, this is dangerous because it means that no one's going to be able to account for what he does. Which is an important part of his job.
Yeah, it's like nobody's even going to record the facts of what happens in terms of what he does.
Yeah, and I mean that's exactly the way he wants it. Which maybe he wants it that way. I mean, he definitely likes attention. I think my guess, and this is very very outside looking in, my guess is that that's the Steve Bannon play. That's my guess. I mean, he's the guy who lets Trump go crazy so that he can say all his shit, spew it left and right, and then but he ultimately wants secrecy, and he's a guy who believes in the recent Russian ideal of spreading so many stories about so many different things with so much hate that you'll just feel bad. I mean, Bannon was the guy who told Trump he pushed him and said, you know what, do it, your instincts are right. When Trump wanted to bring out the...
that's something I never want anyone to say to Trump.
But he was the one who told him that he was right to bring out the accusers of Bill Clinton before that second debate.
Oh, and, God.
And the idea that we all had, cocky liberals had at that point, was that this would make Trump look bad. But what it did was it made everyone feel bad. And if you feel bad enough, you're not sure exactly like where the source of the badness is coming from, is the idea. And it works. I mean, that's Putin's whole gambit, and that's how Bannon sees the media, is you throw them enough shit that everyone just feels bad and they turn to solace to a strongman. For solace to a strongman. That's the idea.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
on that happy note.
Yes. We will get into answering that question. I think we've sort of beaten social media to death We didn't really talk that much about virality, which I wanted. We can get into that in the next episode.
But, well, it'll work out because we'll be talking about more traditional media sources, and virality also plays there, actually. Something happens in social media, and then they start reporting on it. So.
I don't. It's just I noticed this was starting to happen a few years ago when it was when Whitney Houston died, and Don Lemon was sitting there on CNN, literally with his phone
reading
in his
Twitter.
Hands, reading tweets from famous
reading
people.
Twitter,
from like he was like reading his Twitter feed. He's like sitting there. He's like, oh, hi guys. This is some. Somebody just said this. And it's like, this is not news. I'm sorry, but yeah, we'll get into that in the next episode. And I can tell Brett really wants to go to bed. And yeah, we'll see you soon for episode 6.
Break.
Hey, Eric Mack here. Hope you enjoyed this super long edition of Liberally Correct. We have a lot more where that came from, and we're only just getting started. So to close out this episode, we will play another song from the Roots album Game Theory from 2006. This is called Don't Feel Right.
Don't feel right. Don't feel right. Don't feel like. Don't feel like. Don't.